Right, this is going to be another episode of Counterpoints here with me and Maniac. Right, one thing I'm going to say on this show is, even though in theory, when I actually pitched the show to Maniac, because the old Counterpoints didn't really have like a theme, it was more like it was just me and Moses plus usually a guest, and then it was more like we just did the theme based on the guest usually. In general, I did pitch this more as like, we'll maybe have like bigger discussions about like philosophical things or maybe like principles of how the game works, which we have done to some degree. Like I'd say that's actually the lens, if you notice, we sort of broke down moves like potentially the Team Liquid lineup and stuff like that. So I think we have done that in general. But the other thing I've realised is, mate, this is where I actually low-key know that most of CS is just about drama. Because if you notice, all the discussion since CS2 came along is like CS2 dev drama, leaker stuff, which ties into the roster mania angle. And then basically, like, that's all everyone talks about at the moment. Like, what's mad is there's not actually that many shows left where they just talk about the matches and, like, who won and, like, whether you're actually good or not. Like, it's all like, and are they going to change this player? Oh, but are they going to be sold? And it's like, I want to know more about, like is Rops actually the best CS2 player? Like, should we actually be paying attention to that? So I think even though we could have gone more abstract, I think actually at the moment we're filling the niche of just doing the actual bloody tournaments. Because one thing, Maniac, that I did think about while this CS Asia Championship was going on, which if people don't know, was an event that they used to do in CSGO as well. Like if you remember in 2018, Na'Vi won it and all, but that was the one that famously Mouse Sports won when they did that crazy comeback in 2019 against, I think it was Tyler or something. Basically, we've got now, we've had two proper LANs and an online tournament, which look, I'm not a fan of the online tournament, but still some activity among the teams. Like people are playing. Basically, like, I actually feel like people are sort of just only looking at the drama and then actually ignoring that we've got a whole circuit going on here. Like, these are real matches. So I've decided, right, look, we can definitely for fun speculate about what happens if this move happens. Like, we did it with Twist scoring a Liquid. But as of right now, another detail I want to just throw out there for people is the way the scene works right now is actually nothing like sports. Like, this isn't a real off-season. What people are doing is they just get forced by whenever the roster lock is to make their lineup. So the reason why people made that weird summer one after the player break coming in is because that was when the Blast famously their roster lock always defines like Na'Vi's lineup and stuff, and then now basically, like I say, there's about a month or so until the RMR started. At that point in time, when you're in that cycle, it's really difficult. Like, for example, you can obviously change your player, but you can't just come like Falcons presumably would and have like a brand new lineup, otherwise like you can't be involved. So actually the pressure's on these teams. So quite frankly, right now, beyond when there's one that like, for example, obviously we know, like, Magisk officially went to Falcons. Beyond that, except for when it's fun, we have to just analyse these teams as they are. Because let's just start with the whole FaZe Clan topic, Maniac. It's so infuriating to me that I'm watching this team play amazing CS2, and they look like they're far and away got the game nailed down. Like I said, they probably got the best player. Everything looks awesome. They're also on, by the way, like a fucking historic streak. Like, remember when teams like G2 were on that streak in CSGO earlier this year? We were all given it the billing of like, wow, it's just like one of the greatest streaks of all time. That's going on right now, but because unfortunately, before 1 second of CS2 was ever played, we all heard Twist is definitely leaving. Could be Vitality, could be Falcons, could be, you know, because it was all that. And now obviously we all hear it's going to be Team Liquid. I feel like people really do think that it's almost like these are exhibition tournaments. Like, nah, that doesn't really matter though, does it? It's like, as of right this moment, Twist is in FaZe and they are the best team in CS2. Like, we have to talk about that for a while, right?
Yeah, absolutely. as far as I'm concerned, as long as a transfer hasn't been officialized and I see a new player in a jersey, people have to realize that things can change. Things absolutely can change. So the way I'm operating when it comes to FaZe is there was obviously issues at the end of CSGO. I think it was very clear from the outside. They were a little bit running out of steam, maybe some frustration, maybe some exhaustion, whatever it is that maybe just put the seed in some people's mind of, hey, maybe the grass is greener somewhere else. Well, probably the case with Twist. And we know he's got a good relationship with Liquid. And you can imagine how conversations would start to happen and they would kind of pave the way for. But now I think we have to imagine that things can be just completely level. Like, what if you're Twist and you're realizing, hold on a second, we are winning everything. Like, we are actually winning everything in this new game with this new dynamic. I have no idea. I don't have any insider information. I don't know how far along this process is supposed to be, but you have to entertain the idea that the results that are happening now might have a very strong impact on the decisions being made in the next few weeks and months. You talk about the major. I think the problem is that people imagine that everything that's coming up until the major is kind of pointless, and I don't think that's true. I don't agree at all. I think it's now that you are starting to see some very clear patterns about a few players who are definitely making the transition better than others. Robs is kind of coming out of this whole fog as definitely one of the strongest players we have in CS2. Turns out he's in FaZe. Turns out they're winning everything. So yeah, if you're Twist, I wouldn't be surprised if he's had second, third, or fourth thoughts about what the future is supposed to be for them, because FaZe is the best team in the world right now.
I mean, by the way, it's also obviously entirely within his remit if he wants to change his mind. Like you say, until a contract is signed, no deal is done. Like, I actually think, by the way, as a quick aside, one area that I still see teams mess up in, even the team orgs mess up like this, is it's bad enough when a player does it. Like, I've told this story before. A couple of years, it might have been last year, the story was Valde had an offer from Evil Geniuses, and because at the time it was, like, good money, and he just, for whatever, I mean, I'll just straight up, I've told him a lot of the bad stories about Astralis. He didn't want to, right, he turned down an Astralis offer to take the EG one, and spoiler, you never saw EG Valde, did you? So it never happened. So what actually happened is he sort of fucked himself, because since he thought, well, I've got this one here, he gave up the other one. Whereas, like, essentially on both sides of that deal, until someone signs, you have to, here's the fucking straight fire reference for you, it needs to be Moyniak, like a sort of fucking 18th century novel where you're like the fucking, what do you call it, the woman who's trying to get married, and you have to entertain multiple suitors until you get that offer, and then right. You accept. Until that moment, we all know those movies work that women love. Dude, in those movies, you're allowed to run in right 1 second before they get married at the altar and even take the woman away. That's, by the way, I've always thought how low-key toxic is that. That's one of their favourite genres of movie, is where another woman gets completely jilted at the altar and has, like, a whole life ruined, and then the guy runs off with the woman. And they're like, how romantic? And I'm like, holy shit, you guys are fucking wilding. Like, this is like your female version of when we're watching, like, Arnold just shoot 500 people. You do know that, right? Like, we all know it's slightly unhealthy. We're just doing it because we just get off on the thrill, right? So basically, in this scenario, right, because I'll give you the other example, I agree on the Swiss one, by the way. If I'm him, bro, like, it, the first tournament, you do that classic one where you go, well, you know, it's a dead lineup, so maybe we just, you know, we were just playing without pressure. You're just not losing any matches now. And as we said, Rops just looks cracked out completely in a game where actually a lot of the big names are still yet to transition. So if I'm Twists, if it's actually possible, like, if the organizational thing can get figured out, maybe FaZe Clan gets bought from the Game Square people because they're going to have to sell one of the teams, obviously, or they sell a bunch of the pieces. If I'm him, I might be asking to stay now, mate. Like, yeah, that Team Liquid roster sounded awesome on paper, but, like, the joke goes like this. It's one that I know my mate Monty from this company loves, is that old Family Guy joke from years ago, right, where when Peter goes on, like, a game show at the end, because it's a classic American game show, they have this thing where he can either win, Maniac, he's either won, you might remember this joke, a boat, or he can win whatever's in the mystery box. And if you remember, the joke goes that they, when Lois or whatever goes, it just hit the boat, he goes like, no, what about the box though, there could be anything in there, like, I a know, boat. And the joke obviously is like, we just got the boat already, so just take that, you can't lose. So, like, I feel like that dude, like, at this point in time, the reason why I wasn't against him doing the Liquid move before is because at the end of CSGO, FaZe was good, but they weren't the absolute best, and, you know, they were going to probably make some roster move anyway. He himself, by the way, wasn't, like, the guy fragging out of control. There was a lot of reasons that made sense. Right now, if I'm him, it's like, but is Liquid actually going to be better than FaZe is now? Like, it'd be hard to see it. Like, and the other one I'll just throw out there, because this is the last, like, transfer thing I'll chuck out, we'll talk about some CS then, is I don't think people actually know, dude, how monumental that fucking Nico not joining Falcons move is. Because here's the part that they haven't figured out. I saw this happen with Henry G when he did Cloud9. This exact thing is what ruined that whole lineup, mate, which is when you make that lineup and you've got that big board of all those names that you want. You know this, even just socially when people made teams. The main problem you always have is you get, like, a catch-22. Like, I'll give you the analogy from, like, Henry G's, because it saw me years ago, he'll give a fuck. Right? He was talking to people like Nico and Hunter, by the way. Well, what happens is this. When you talk to them and then they're like, yeah, maybe I'd be interested. So you're like, right, pencil them in, potential maybe. What happens then is, then when you go to, like, might be a Valde or a Zipnix or some other, you know, some role player that you really want, a really good, or Jacob or something, they're going to go, who else are you talking to? And you know this, when you tell them, oh, Nico and Hunter, they'll be like, oh, right, yeah, I'll be really interested in that. Well, I can tell you right now, the day you come back to them and go, by the way, bad news, Nico and Hunter are out, but you still want to join, right? They suddenly, all you need to know is, like, their enthusiasm gets slashed to, like, 10% if they even keep talking to you at that point in time. So I don't think people know how crazy, you see why I gave this analogy now? I don't think people know how crazy it is for that Falcons team. Bearing in mind, remember, they have no league slots. They are essentially not a team right now. They were just that French mix that played the odd RMR, and then now they're trying to build it with Magus Gonzalez. But that might have completely set them back a long time, because, like I say, the RMR's not that far away, and there are so many of the, like, when they had Nico in that lineup with Snappy and Magus, like, you already had like the bases there. That's where two people will just join, and they might even be mega players. Right now that you've lost an equal one, and obviously the whole point of the equal angle is no one knows who the AWPer is. Bro, right, you actually have very little in Falcons right now. Like, you've been reset mega hard. Like, I'm actually wondering if that project's going to sort of like be delayed a bit, mate. I haven't got much time to get the five together now.
That's the problem. That's the problem that I see, is that there is an expiration date on how long you take to formulate this five together. Like, the RMRs around the corner. It's going to be January for the open qualifiers or close qualifier or whatever, and then February already into RMRs. So I think the whole project is going to have to kind of rethink a new approach immediately, because at some point, like, Nico and Monacy were kind of rumored to join, and then obviously you put Snappy on top of that, Magisk, and then you imagine Boris.
By the way, it was implied behind the scenes that, like, both of them did want to join. Like, Nico, I've heard them, I think this is even said publicly by someone, I've heard he actually reached out to Falcons first before I think even Zonica joined or something. Like, he himself wanted to interest. And then basically, this is where fans didn't get why that news came out about Monacy. That news wasn't just like to tell the world, like, Monacy's not for sale or pay more. As far as I know, Monacy wanted to go, and I think that was like their way of saying, like, we've decided no, and so we're not making it official, so no one will even inquire anymore. So no, I think you're right, actually. As far as I know, those two moves were probably going to happen, yeah
exactly. So now since that's not going to happen, God knows where they have to go. I mean, losing Nico is the biggest gut punch you can probably have in terms of how attractive the lineup is to anyone who has to take a risk, because these risks have to be here to compensate what you were talking about. You have no league spot, and even though Counter-Strike is going to be different in 2025, players still want to know that they're going to be able to compete in, like, the IEMs and the Blasts of the world at least for one more year. People still are looking pretty short term when it comes to calendar. They're not trying to plan their career in, like, 2026. Like, they have to know that the year that's come is going to be interesting. So now you're left with, I don't even know if I'm Snappy, do I reconsider? Do you actually leave what you have?
Dude, there's another one. Same concept, right? If you're Snappy and you join now, and it's like you still have to build the project, it takes, say, 6 months to get, like, because obviously right now you'd probably have to get, like, some tier 2 player, like, so you can get massive names tomorrow. That's the other point, is if he leaves now, he misses whatever's going on with Ents. Like, with the timing how it's going right now, you maybe we do it after the first major, you know, like,
it might have to be, honestly, because a whole lot of teams are making changes right now, which means whoever is going to actually stick to their guns might have just a head start in the race until the Copenhagen Major, right? You think about G2, apparently changes are going to happen, which, by the way, we could talk about as well, Nexa joining and all that, whatever the hell. Vitality made a change, Messi's coming in as well. It's only really FaZe that's seemingly untouchable. Astralis is rumored to make changes very soon. FaZe and Mal's pretty stable. And also, by the way, grand final of CSC, so we can catch back that train up. But you might have to rethink if... Maybe you might just burn yourself. If you make a very deep, fundamental change now, 2 or 3 months prior to an RMR, you might actually be very sad at the end of the day.
By the way, as an aside, the one downside I did think of the CS Asian Champions is that obviously the Ents couldn't go with the real lineup. That was a bit of a bummer. Not least because, like, to see it's like Dikak who can't go, it's like, bro, we've already got a team where there's, like, fucking players from Israel. Like, there's already going to be fucking visa problems. You can't not go as well. Like, because it's always a bummer when, like, a top team goes with the standing, you know, because even though you give them some sort of, like, well, they could still do something. It's like, the difference is, if real Ents was here, this would have been a banger as to who would win. Like, obviously, like you say, Mouse and Foyer, FaZe both look great at the beginning of the game. Maybe we'll talk about Mouse first, because obviously we talked about FaZe when they won the other one. Like, obviously, this is basically confirmed that they've been able to just keep going what they were able to do at the end of CSGO. Like, it looks awesome so far, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really, really liked what I saw from Mouse overall. It doesn't seem like the wins they've gathered under their belt in CSGO have led them to rest on their laurels, which is something that I was a little bit afraid of. It doesn't seem like that at all. They seem very hungry. They seem very invested, very involved in all of the games they were playing. And they still have that kind of momentum that is going with them right now. I think, honestly, what they did in CSC was what they needed to do, right? I don't think I'm not going to just break out the fireworks right now. It's what they needed to do. We came to an event where the final was supposed to be FaZe v Mouse. You look at the playing field and whatever standing situations and the quality of the teams, they needed to be in the grand final, and they did that. The main headlight, as far as I'm concerned, is that Yimpat might just end up being one of the best anchors for the next years to come. I know it might be a little bit a big of a statement right now, but the quality of what I'm seeing from this young guy, event after event now, leads me to believe that, holy shit, like, we might have something very special in our hands. Because Pro League in itself was already kind of a warning sign, but you could say, hey, that's one event, that maybe a flash in the pan. It was a small kind of studio environment in Malta. It wasn't really a big land. It wasn't really a kind of an audience. There was some caveat you could put to it, but now it's actually back-to-back LAN events where he has almost MVP-like numbers with the positions that he plays. Shit, like, that he is something. I think they really found something special in this player, and he continues to deliver. So for me, that's the huge positive. There are some negatives, and we can touch on them if you want. There are some negatives, but the big positive for me is Yimpa and the quality of CS he's putting out.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, obviously, I did the thing like everyone did, where I just called him Jim Fat for like a first month and a half. It's partly Yimpat, because obviously he's Finnish, so they have like a weird way of where they put the emphasis on the word. Oh, I agree, mate. The crazy thing is, after the first tournament run, it was one of the most obvious people whose stat line was like, well, they can't do this again. Come on, like, look, it's ridiculous. Like, and you look at the role they play. He really is like a fucking anchor doing like sort of spots people don't want to play or that are more tricky. But the thing is, this is where... There's something weird about Counter-Strike. I mean, I have to compare it to sports and games like football, where you know one of the weirdest things about sports is, I know in basketball they often say like there's a thing called like basketball IQ, and the reason they try and say it like that, Maniac, is because some people who actually in real life would sound like an idiot to you, they wouldn't seem very cerebral. Sometimes in the game, they just have an insane like sort of mental understanding of how to play and where to be and that sort of, like, I mean, the example I often give in CS is, to me, when I say Shox is a genius, I mean like intuitively he seems like a genius. I don't really think if I sat him down and asked him to explain right. to me, I don't think he'd like Blade and he would do it and make it amazing. But if I look at what he does in the game, some of his decision making, it's almost like the joke is, it's like he's reading the Matrix at times in those clutches. Like, how does he know where to go? The Jim Hat guy has this. Like, not like a Shox, obviously, but in the sense of like, when you get a player, the most comparable example I can give is when Perfecto came along, right? When these players come along and they haven't played properly at tier one, and then you see them have like this style where it's not like they're just fragging everyone. They're playing like smart, and they have like areas where they're actually even more disciplined than like top pros sometimes. You're just like, where was this guy? Like, this guy was just playing on some team nowhere. No one saw this. Like, it's actually crazy. Like, I know obviously the hype with this guy is he's fucking Sergei's younger brother. But when you say that to me for all those years, that just sounds like he's got mad skills. You know, like when we heard about Nevera coming from screen, you think, right, his mechanics must be sick. If no one told me he's this sort of player, though. Like, this actually looks like the sort of player who, I mean, this is why it's perfect for Mouse. It's like, this is like, what you call like found money. Like, there's no way you should even have this on a team like Mouse. Like I say, this guy actually looks pretty well formed already, and we're talking about what, like his second like real tier one lad or something. Like, actually, after these first couple, look, obviously if he maintains it, it'll be like one of the greatest of all time, but like, it just looks insanely promising, insanely at the moment. Yeah,
and he's got what's really scary about him is that it feels like he's got the three most important boxes already checked out, which means he plays good cerebral Counter-Strike, he makes good clutch decisions, and mechanically speaking, he's strong. And it's really rare to come along a rookie that has all of these. Like, so usually it's just one of these that's kind of interesting, and you think, oh, I see potential here. Like, yes, this guy's definitely skilled, but you know, in clutches he seems a little bit lost, and he makes a few mistakes, but he's going to be fine. He seems to have already everything. He's very clever in the decisions he makes, specifically in defense. Honestly, the defense is where I think his plus value is insane. Like, how he plays his roles, it's very, very relatable to Rops on the CT side. Not on the T side. I would put that one to one. I think Rops's impact on the T side is unmatched right now in the lurks and like the space he takes. But how reliable this guy is on the CT side, like, I honestly think there's only really Rops that's in that contention for same conversation. Like, the amount of security he brings you, and the fact that whenever he finds himself in a 1v1, 1v2 at the end, you can still trust really he's going to have a good shot. Oh, Jesus Christ. So now that's the positive. And if this is a level that is going to be maintained in the next few months and or years, let's be hopeful here, then yeah, I think we might have one of the greatest for CS2 already now. I really don't see a whole lot of players we can keep up with him. Now, here comes the key, here comes the negative. I've seen two things in this grand final that I worried about in the past that I didn't know whether that was going to weather or not, but it stayed on. I really think that Torji kind of missed out on the grand final, and I think Frozen was not the Frozen that we like to see. And I know there's this conversation, we can kind of divide it, we can dissect it. On one hand, you have Frozen, and there is a bit of a tug of war between, you know, pundits and whatever. Some people say he's one of the greatest rifle, and I am a little bit more reserved because I do think his numbers are great, but I still think there is this last sort of step, and these are the kind of matches where the last step is kind of needed. When you have a superstar like that, if we want to put him in the same category as the Nikos, the Zywoos, the Simple, the Rops now, if we want to put him in this category, then we cannot be lenient with that performance in a grand final. That's a give and take, right? If you want to have that position in that conversation, then you can't have a grand final where you go missing and you are pedestrian compared to what you can do. That was a little bit sad, because prior to that, he had great numbers. I think he walked into the grand final with...
Oh, he could have been the MVP for sure, yeah.
Yeah, he was in MVP contention walking into the grand final. And it's more than just stats. It's the eye test looking at a player who's suddenly a little bit more indecisive, a bit more hesitant in his move, that doesn't really take the same kind of risks. That is really something I hope they're working on, because if he unlocks that last step, then yeah, I mean, his name is going to be up there in the conversation. And the Torji point, yeah, he kind of floated through that grand final without having any kind of impact. It wasn't a great event for him overall. I still say that he is better now than he was prior to Shuhei joining Maus. I think this narrative had some basis to it. I think there's some truth to it. I'm not going to challenge it. But this was a little bit rough for him. And it was more of the Torji that I had seen in the past, which is basically a player, well, if things are going well, he can catch on fire. And he's had already games in CS2 where his numbers are bonkers because Maus start winning and they're having momentum. And holy hell, he's getting in there and he's spraying people. He's decent with the rifle and all. But when you see a team that's in the rough and it's whatever, 12-12, starting overtime in the grand final, I'm not going to put my money on him to have that kind of move, to have the spine, to have the winning move when the pressure is at the max. These were the two players that let me down a little bit in the grand final, and I think are partially the reason why FaZe were able to have such a comeback. Because you also have to realize now, FaZe is slowly starting to, from a phenomenological standpoint, FaZe is starting to become something more than a team in terms of, are we going to beat these guys? And I started to see and feel that from Maus, where it got into their head, like, wait a minute, they're doing this comeback against us now. They're about to beat us. And once you get into that area, it's almost as if you already lost the game. If you start imagining the idea that, shit, we're not going to beat these guys. They're going to do another comeback. Oh my God. Like, they've been doing comebacks all the time. You have to be so strong to beat that. And I do believe that Maus kind of fell in that trap in the grand final.
Yeah, on the point about the Maus players, like, obviously, in general, all the pointers do still mark upwards. It's like, it's looking awesome. Like, right now, I mean, look, they obviously got helped by the fact that all this Rostermania stuff means there's a lot of uncertainty at the top of the scene. But all the stuff we said after Pro League, like, they really can just be, like, a permanent top five team. There's no reason why. When you look at this lineup, like, it just works. Like, and by the way, it did work from quite early on, and it's looking great so far. So, yeah, right now, I have no reason to think they won't be in position to be in semis and to contend for titles. But if you look at the players, there obviously are still flaws. Like, the main one obviously is just inexperience. Like, so I think in general, like, someone like Shuhei's doing a great job calling, just obviously hasn't been in many finals, has he? So there's another level of IGLing there. It's a different type of decision. Like, I always think this is the reason why, in my opinion, the most deceptive match in CS is like an underdog winning a semi-final. Because the amount of time, if you play a semi-final as an underdog, you don't have the pressure and you can just do whatever you want. Like, if you lose, no one cares anyway. If you win, whatever you did will look awesome. But in a final, that call is different. Like, the call you're making in the semi is sort of like, guys, just go for it. In the final, it's like, fuck, am I going to blow the match? Like, you're thinking that. So yeah, already I think in general, he's just tracking well. I'll give him a couple more chances. So same with Torji. I'll give him a slight pass in the sense that, like, he's barely ever been in this sort of scenario where he could win the tournament. Quite frankly, he played well in the other tournaments too. And he, like you say, just in general, the level has improved though. Like, as long as the level overall is going up and before these big matches, he is fairly reliable. So that's all great. I'm with you on the Frozen one. If people have ever watched my shows with Maui, they'll know that Maui is very hard pushed for Frozen for about 2 years now. In fact, he even used to, before Rops went into this like God mode period, he even used to say Frozen was better than Rops. Now, this is where we've had a point of contention, right? Because I've never agreed with him. It's kind of like what you're saying. I've always like given Frozen his due to a certain level, but I do think if we're going to compare him with like Rops right now, I do think there's a gear that Rops has that Frozen hasn't gone to. And one of the reasons why is, because here's the thing, what people are forgetting is, it's not the same scenario. When I looked at Frozen versus Rops when they were in Maus spots, right, yeah, they were both in the lineup with Carrigan that won those titles, etc. But that was when Frozen was like 16 and he didn't even have his role set at the time. That was when Rops was already starting to get really good. Essentially, he just got reset by the online era and he was in Maus for 2 years, wasn't he? Like, so at that point in time, I could sort of look at him on Maus and go like, right, well, I don't know, he's obviously not in finals now, but I've seen him in them before. I have a sense that he can play in them. And then it turned out my gamble was right. He was pretty good in phase and he's had some awesome results now. The problem with Frozen is I just haven't seen him go to that actual level. I always say this, it's one thing to have the potential, but it's like Zeru in the Major. You have to actually do it though. You have to actually show that you can really just make the score go to 16 rounds on the score, but win the Major. Like, everyone had to do it, mate. It's like, there was a great saying I remember back in hockey where I was watching a game from way back in the day where it was actually Wayne Gretzky, believe it or not, this is before he'd become like totally goated. And the commentator was even saying like, Gretzky has to show up in this game, you know, and he was listing off all the great players in history that don't, like Bobby Orr showed up when it mattered. And this guy, it's the same concept. Like, it doesn't matter how good good you are on paper. You have to actually do it. So that's what I'm just waiting for from Frozen. Because to me, when I look at this final here, if you think about the first CS2 tournament that we had, when Elige and Complexity went off in the final, dude, if Frozen does that like Elige did, they win this tournament. Like, they actually, we'd now be talking about, that's the first team that did beat FaZe properly and took them down. Because, yeah, I'm with you. Let's flip to that then. Let's talk a little bit about what you were referring to there, because I know what you mean. Basically, it's like the premise. I mean, the obviously most famous example is the NiP 87 and Zero. If you ever go and talk to the players that were playing against NiP, obviously, they know you should, in theory, be able to beat them. Spoiler, in scrims, people were beating them. Obviously, didn't really just win every game. But as you're saying, it becomes like its own phenomenon outside of just like, this is FaZe and you are whatever your team is called and how do we match up on these maps? Eventually, like you're saying, it becomes all these like mind demons of like, but no one can beat them. Oh, they always come back. I mean, in this case, by the way, the other nightmare about someone like Rops being their best player is, it means you feel like you never won the round. If he's alive and Slash, there's 30 seconds on the clock, you think in your brain like, I've seen him do this before, and those thoughts make people go crazy, dude. It's like those stories back in the day of when someone would be in the jungle and just like, just the sheer like signal noise of it and nothing, no reference, what can drive people crazy. They lose their minds, you know, and they come out and they just talk to themselves. Like, I agree with you on that phenomenon. Like, essentially, the best thing for all these top teams is someone has just got to eliminate FaZe early, like real soon in the next tournament. If that happens, we're fine. But I'm with you. If they win the next tournament, mate, and they keep this streak going, it might sound counterintuitive because in theory it should end at any moment, but actually it will make it harder for teams to beat them. Because I agree. I think teams are going to get the sense soon of like, you're never winning the game. Like I say, even if you have a lead, they're going to come back somehow, aren't they? Even if we're up like 10 to fucking 3, we all know they're going to do a comeback. It's going to be like a 13-11 game, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's two angles. The first one is the earlier in the tournament, the better to play them, because the deeper you go, the more the pressure comes in and more you start thinking, holy hell, FaZe is having another one of these runs. That's now whatever, let's say series 22. I think they're at 16 right now. So the earlier in the tournament, the better to beat them. And as the game progresses, if you ever have a lead, you need to close. You need to close, because if you allow them to come from a 10-3 to a 10-10, like the idea that it is still just a normal round of Counter-Strike, round 21, it's just untrue. It becomes untrue. It's not just 10 to 10. It's the path that has led to that 10-10 scoreline, which in usual, I think it's probably very unlikely currently in FaZe's form that they will allow someone to come back against them from 10-2 to 10-10. I don't think that's going to happen. If they're in the lead, they're going to smash. But if you allow them to come back, you just... The danger when you start playing these teams, and you mentioned NIP, I mean, I even played against NIP at the time. The most dangerous and insidious demon is for you to feel like you have to do something exceptional in order to win.
Right.
Once you get into that mindset, it is over. It is over, because you are going to overcompensate. You are going to tense yourself up, force duels, because instead of just doing what's correct, you're looking for what's perfect, and the perfect is the enemy of the good, and that's where they get you. That's where you see them sometimes winning a 4v2 or 2v4 situations or 1v3 because no one is peaking, because they're all thinking, oh my God, it's Rops. Quick, we have to hide. It's a 1v3 instead of just all together just peeking at the same time, which is the simplest way about it. Same with the 2v4. Oh, I have to rush this guy quickly. Now I can do it. Oh shit, it's 2v2 now and pressure is up. All of these small mistakes, they amount to something much greater when you play against a team like that that is starting to be invincible, where you can't really dissect them from one another. Like, one mistake lead to another, which leads to another, which leads to FaZe as well being more confident. Because that's the other side of that coin, right? Yes. One side of the coin is obviously the fear that you strike in other people, which I really believe is starting to be something with FaZe right now. This phenomenon is starting to take off. But the other side of the coin is their own belief that whatever scenario is happening in the game, they can win again. Whatever the scoreline, 0-6 down, 1-7. How many times at CAC did they have shitty starts to their game? How many times were they down 0-5, 1-6, 2-7 even? And you're watching the game thinking, all it's going to take is a multi-kill. All they need is one of their player to multi-kill their way out of a bad situation, and boom, that's it, they're right back on track. Because now they themselves have this intrinsic feeling that whatever the scoreline, we're going to be able to come back. And this is pure gold as a team. Like, once you share that core belief that whatever the scoreline, you're going to be able to come back into this, it's like you just basically beat the casino. Like, you just hit the roulette, you're on track, and they have that now. And that's what makes them extremely dangerous, at least for the next few weeks to come.
By the way, I definitely agree that obviously there is also the flip side of the coin that for the team themselves, it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like you say, like in the same way as the other opponents, like worried you're going to come back. You also think you're always going to, you're going to find a way. And also, if you think of the DNA of FaZe, that's so dangerous to give this team. It actually reminds me of when they were in that like really good phase early on of winning all the tournaments in 2022. Because the same thing happened then. You always felt like until the opponent basically reaches like at least the fucking 15 rounds, you never felt like they're going to win the map. You always felt like Carrigan's going to have a late call, and then Rops is going to do this, then Brokey's going to win this AWP battle here, and then Twist is going to get a 2K, an entry on here. Like, you just felt like it was inevitable, like this checklist was going to get ticked off. So, yeah, to me, first of all, if you're someone like Carrigan, you already had insane confidence in your calls anyway. Now you're just going to go for them because they've bloody just worked too many times when you're in this dire straits and you pull it out your ass. And then if you think about Rops, this is the whole problem I've had as someone trying to analyse Rops since he's been in FaZe Clan again. I used to say this back when, at the beginning of this year, when he was like having to like hard carry them through some of those games where they were a bit iffy. I would always say like, the problem is when I actually watch him play until he wins the clutch at the end of the round, I actually do think I would normally be really critical. Like, it reminds me of people like Happy and Get Right when it went too far, and it's like, ah, you're baiting a bit too much here, mate. Like, you haven't given any presence, or like, you know, like, even if you're finding like a hole here, like your team might just be dead before you get there. Like, you might. And so I want to just tell him, like, critique it, but it reminds me of when Simple became the GOAT. I always say this, which is, I don't blame the other analysts for going, oh, it's a bit aggressive, this peak he's doing there, but eventually it just started working so much I had to tell people, like, you do realize, like, for the normal player you're right, but essentially this guy's showing us we're wrong. Like, he's making it work every time he does that, though. So it's the same with Rops. Like, I can't really critique his game, mate. Like, it looks perfect right now. Like, he's basically mastered the timings, and even when I think the timing's wrong, that's led to some of the most insane clutches that I've ever seen anyone win in CS, and he just does it like routinely now. That's the other scary thing. Like, if you're Rops, this guy doesn't genuinely seem like he gets fazed by the clutch. Like, it just seems like he has that great thing where, you know, the really amazing players don't ever let themselves get like partial credit for like almost hitting a shot. They'll always just be like, oh fuck, and you just think, nah, you were so close. Like, no, his whole thing's that he just expects to win all the clutches, mate. Like, he just thinks he knows what the plan is and executes it. I think it's wild. It's fucking
wild. Great, it's great to watch Rob's play right now, and I agree with you. I think there was a time probably at the end of his mouse stint where he was definitely way too far on the selfish stats related late round lurks that have no impact. He was on that a little bit extreme of a continuum. Not anymore. And I think now it's even more dangerous because this sort of momentum that he's on, I think he's playing way more aggressive now than he was before. Not, I mean, he hasn't become an extremely aggressive player, but he's taking much more risks because I think he's probably feeling right now that he's got the upper hand over 99.9% of everybody against him in the server. So he's allowing himself to take so much space on the map as a sole individual that the amount of resource that FaZe is actually devoting to him compared to his return, it's like, it's basically if a venture capital firm in Wall Street is just investing a little bit of money somewhere and then suddenly boom, it's like plus 3,000%. It's like, holy shit, we just gave this guy a flash and he gave us the round. So it seems as if right now, the only way to shut down Rops is to go straight for the duel against him. But that's the problem. That's the problem because teams now cannot just tell their anchors, oh, by the way, good luck with you. You're going to have a 1v1 match against Rops and it's going to be fine. No. Now it feels like teams are already forced to go for the duel against him so that they won't give him the time to lurk in the late round, which means like your sort of decision tree, if you have a decision tree at the beginning of the round, you lose almost half the branches already because it's like, oh, I can't really play my position passively because holy hell, Rops is against me right now and I don't trust myself in fighting his timing, so I'm going to have a go and fight him. It's happened a few times. Like on Nuke, for example, Yimpa a couple of times just went on and killed Rops in radio, just straight up. I'm going to take a duel to you and I'm going to put you down. That's great. But what if the round goes along and now suddenly it's 40 seconds and Rops is alive and you lost track of him? Wow, like it's... Yeah, I think it's much more diverse and versatile than Get Right used to be, by the way. At the time, Get Right used to be extremely passive in his lurk. It's much more versatile, and it's a beauty to see. And if people are saying, okay, so I'm just going to put it out there, the whole debate about who's the best CS2 player right now, it's probably Rops, yes. Based on what we have seen, which is a very small sample size, and there are some teams that have played one event, some have played two events, based on this small sample size, yes, he is the best player that we have in CS2 currently. And I don't even really think it's a debate. I think he's probably a good head and shoulder above everybody. But I'm just waiting for the next 3 months to see where people stabilize, right?
I mean, definitely carried the fuck out of this tournament. Like, the real problem you have is the other names that you could put in there. A lot of them are the ones that haven't played more than one tournament. Like, we don't know how Elige or Monacy or these guys. Like, when we get the next tournaments, obviously we'll see how these guys are going. So, one thing I will say on this, though, is the other part that I think is a bit wild about this, the fact that FaZe never loses as well, is, dude, the first one was fine. If you remember, the first tournament was where they lost the BO1 and then they just won all the series. Mm-hmm. And like, they looked actually pretty good. Like, those were some banger matches, the one we call it, Sarah. This one, I think, is even more scary for your opponent. Because, dude, at this one, a bunch of their players, like, Brokey had a shit tournament. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in fact, even that Ents match, like, look, it wasn't a bad match. Everyone, that was like a fucking heavyweight boxing match. Everyone was punching the shit out of each other in that one. So it was a great game. But, like, this wasn't even like... Here's the difference, Maniac. One of the reasons I still critique Huxley is because nearly every time he wins, he just has like three players pop off in the tournament. And sometimes it's not even Nico. It could be like JKS, Hunter and Monacy pop off and have like a 1.19 to 1.25 rating. Like, Carrigan just won a tournament here where, like, actually the numbers are fairly pedestrian. If you go look at the player stats, you would think Mouse or Astralis win the tournament, or maybe Ents snagged it because Nerds had a good, you know what I mean? Like, actually, this is one of the ones where, this is where, like, that, like, the boogeyman thing of, like, oh my God, FaZe is coming, starts to build up, and when you can just win games when you're not even playing on your game. Like, that's terrifying to me. So I agree. Like, the best thing for the other teams that could happen is basically, like, someone in the quarterfinals the next tournament just eliminates FaZe, and then all this goes away. The counter stops whatever many matches it's been. Because there's the other thing that's going to be wild is, dude, everyone tried to make all those excuses when Nip did dominate CSGO of like, well, no one else makes money and, you know, and no one's traveling. Like, what are they going to say now, bro? There's no excuse. Like, if this team actually wins like 25 matches in a row, they just did it. Like, there was plenty of people trying to stop them. There were, by the way, there's people getting paid like 40K a month. Like, there's loads of there's people grinding the game like a motherfucker since it became CS2, beta months ago, pros. Like, the difference is, unlike the Nip one, there's going to be no excuses for this one. Like, this is just real. Like, it's just happening. We can't stop it.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that there was, it wasn't a victory where everyone was destroying in terms of stat makes it that much more scary. I think it's that much scarier because you can definitely see there were moments in some of these games where the fire was definitely not lit under FaZe. Like, they were relatively slow at the very beginning. It was a little bit sloppy individually. Like, some duels were a little bit disjointed. The trade was not exactly great. And you're watching this game and you're thinking, there's no way they're going to win. Like, you're not supposed to win. If you're having that start of a game, that's it. Like, your opponent is going to have momentum. They're going to have the financial upper hand on you and they're just going to steamroll you. And then, unfortunately for the opponent, there's a couple of moments where, like, there's a 2v2, there's a 3v3, and that should be won by Ents or by Mouse or insert whatever name you want, and you lose it. And you lose that clutch. You're like, fuck, and then suddenly FaZe have money. And then the quickness with which they go from playing relatively poor to playing exceptionally well is just too quick. And that's really the mark of a team that is scary to play against, is that it doesn't really matter if you have them in the ropes for a few rounds. They only need this or that clutch. That's all they need. That's all they need to start playing immediately better. And it's in their own hands. And I don't really believe it's a case of just everyone is fragging everywhere all the time. I don't think that's the case. I just think they have an incredible belief in themselves now at any point in the game that one clutch, one multi-kill is going to kickstart the whole engine. And that means that you're very much at risk when you play them. I'm very much looking forward to the next events to see what other teams can do against them.
It's actually the weirdest thing about FaZe the whole time they've had this line. It's why I always stress, like, I don't know if they'll ever, like, obviously now we're in a different game, so it doesn't count. I always used to say, I don't know if they're actually the best CSGO team of all time, but I think they're the most entertaining team I've ever seen play, because they actually are just like Rocky. They have to get the shit kicked out of them first, like you say. They get to the point where normally you just break and you lose the game, and then it's like, oh no, he's get up on the standing nine count, and then suddenly they start coming back to life, and then I, because I've always thought, but I'll even use the analogy, it's like Rocky IV. Like, that's the premise, is what's actually terrifying eventually if your opponent is, wait a minute, I'm giving you like my best shot and you're not going down, like, what the fuck, how do I win? Like that's the terrifying part, because you have that horror movie thing where it's like, no matter how much you run, you can't like gain ground on the guy in your dream that's always 10 steps behind you, and you keep running as fast as you can, isn't it? Like, so, but the key thing I was saying is that's only just starting to happen now, though. If you actually nip it in the bud now, it won't be a problem, because I've seen all those other ones. Like, it's why one of the things that I feel like fans always get a bit thrown by is, you know, as an analyst, where you try to make a point that a match was very close. So, like, a classic example would be, you know, that famous IEM Sydney where the Astralis lineup lost 3-0 to FaZe when they had, like, exist as a stand-in. But, like, it was, like, every game was, like, 16-14 or, like, triple overtime or whatever. So even though it was 3-0, we always say it was one of the closest best of five ever played, because even though one team didn't win a map, like, they almost all, like, did good enough to win a map. At the same time, though, that's just, like, to stress how close it is, right? I always tell people, people. Actually, if that team had won map one, the entire series would be different because the way that the game plays out would be so different in that sense. So it's like a similar concept in that regard. Like, they wouldn't really just win all these games immediately like that. But at the same time, I don't think people realize how important it actually is, like how you start in a game, whether you actually feel like you have a lead, whether you can win in that regard. So if you haven't watched much CS, it is super rare teams can just continue to come back like this. Like, normally you do just front run and win the game. That's the normal way Counter-Strike's played. So it's why I do think, in some way, I always say, like, one, with those old teams, when Carrigan used to have the reputation that he choked, I always thought, like, saying this idea that matches would play out differently. He even agrees himself. Like, if they actually just won that Boston Major, or maybe even just the kind of 8-day afterwards, it probably never would have been any of those problems. Like, that one win alone would make you think the opposite of this. Like, right, we're not cursed. They don't always come back. We don't always find a way to lose it. We aren't always throwing it. So, like, it works on both sides. That's why I thought it was very apt that you made the point that, like, it works positively for the guy who himself is sort of getting into the narrative. Because the joke is, in theory, the coach will be telling them, you know, don't pay attention to that. You just do the match. But even they're going to know that this is going on. Like, by the way, they'll now be aware of this counter of how many matches they've won and all that jazz. Like, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day, this is a real thing, guys. When Nip actually finally lost to that Virtus Pro team at that Star Series in, like, I'm going to say, like, April of, like, fucking 2013 or whatever. Famously, they even said they were actually glad they lost and it was a relief. Like, eventually that media narrative becomes crazy. So, yeah. They're just on the train right now, aren't they?
The best example I have, best comparison I have is, it's tennis. I look a lot like tennis, obviously the Roger Federer days or whatever, but I really like the whole mental warfare between two players when you watch a tennis game, right? And you would have players like Djokovic or like Federer where the first set would be insanely close. They would be 5-5, it'd be 6-6, it'd go to a tiebreak. And you would know if Federer or if Djokovic is going to win this, the match is probably over. Because the way the other player would react to almost having won that set, but not really, would be way too detrimental for them. And on the other hand, Djokovic or Federer, having that confidence now of having won that set, having won the tiebreak, would just go on and absolutely fly on them. And I think it's pretty apt comparison in Counter-Strike, because you can watch a game of CS and the scoreline might be 4-4. And if you are doing analysis of the forces, you'd think, but that's a pretty even game right now. Wow, Mouse is really giving FaZe a run for the money. All these rounds are very, it's very close and it's very tight in its clutches. But what matters is how both of these teams are going to react to either a disappointment or the other side of it, a happy ending, a happy clutch or whatever. That's what matters to me right now. And this is where FaZe is becoming extremely dangerous, because I think they have the ability to stomach so many of these rounds lost and yet play at a high level. And this is not a lot of teams can do that. I mean, G2 was famously, even when they were winning, famously a team that would get down in the dumps when they were losing rounds and then suddenly catch on fire, but they would still very much suffer from lost rounds. It feels like FaZe right now, I love your rookie analogy. It feels like they can just get slapped in the head like 4 or 5 times in a game. And you're never going to knock them out. You're never going to knock them out. Like, the second you stop focusing, they're going to get back at you. And this is where I think they've become so interesting from a psychological standpoint. We'll have to see if it keeps up.
That's actually one area, by the way, that I actually think it is underrated for your coach to be himself, often, ideally an IGL, like a former top player himself. Because these are like the psychological aspects, like you say, of the warfare that like a normal player doesn't even know exists. Like a classic one where if you watch games as an analyst and you're trying to like watch the flow of a game is if an underdog is ever really winning a map, but then the favorite fights back and it goes to OT. I always tell people the second it goes to OT, the favorite's going to win this game now. Mm-hmm. Because the like you say, the underdog, even though, by the way, he hasn't lost the game, he just feels, it's like a gambler mentality. He feels like he's lost so much, he's even probably going to now like try to like win it back and claw at it. Whereas actually in that scenario, what he needed to do if he was a veteran is just be like, you know, like one chance is gone, but that's okay, reset, just start over. In fact, what you famously say, it's like people often would say this in matches, like if you're in tennis, right, there's one set left, you say it's a one set game. You don't think about, right, but I was up 2 sets, or, but what about that break point? If you do that, yeah, you're going to get lost again. You're going to expend all your energy and waste it. What you do is you have to like essentially the pro is the one who just resets and just takes the round that's ahead of him. No, I agree, that's definitely a factor, because that's where this is actually some of the things. It's funny, this is where we don't have enough time on desks, mate, because when we say things like intangibles and the choking factor, people think we're just using buzzwords. Like we're not. No, we're talking about things like this. Like part of things like choking are like being unable to identify, for example, mentally where you are in a game. How do you frame what's happening to you? How do you characterize how you're performing? Or like for example, if you think you are choking, if you think you're, there's so many different factors that, like, these are all swirling around. It's just that obviously if you only look at the game and the server, they're invisible to you. They're just outside in your mind. But the joke, obviously, of the human mind is that can be the most powerful thing in the game. Because I always think the best example ever to me is that Boston Major Final. It's like, bro, I'll one day do a video on this because people don't know how ridiculous it is. Literally, those two teams, FaZe just won every single time, mate, before and after every single game. It's like they couldn't lose to this team. But because in that final, there was a weird flip of the dynamic where Cloud9 had nothing to lose. They were on home soil. Everyone's going crazy. FaZe thought they had won the game. They're probably, for real, if you think of those players, actually thinking things like remember, four of them had never won a major. They're like, oh, this is here. I've done it. Like, basically, all we've got to do is, like, one of us just has to get, like, a 2K now, and we win this whole... You're already doing all that. So I don't think people realise, like, half the battle there... Like, put it this way, if I made a documentary, Maniac, a way more interesting documentary wouldn't be, like, actually break down, like, Carrigan, why did you do this push here? What, you know, what was the flow of the game? How much utility did he count from the B set? The more interesting documentary is something like that. Like, what were you actually thinking when you were up 13-7? Like, what happened when you'd lost the first two, you know, fucking championship rounds? How did you rethink that? If you notice, that's where all the juice is, mate. And sadly, I do think, not our fault, like, the way we set up our CS games, we don't always get enough time to actually tackle those topics, because those are the really fascinating ones, if you can ever get, like, an insight in it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, first of all, we operate on a very limited timer when we do broadcasts, right? So we have to go to the essentials.
Of course.
And I think these topics deserve more than just a 30-second shout-out. I mean, you can always just put out there the idea and then let people kind of work on it. But these topics need more time. And also, after all, we're making hypotheses, right? Until the moment that you're actually sitting down with a player and you kind of get into his psyche and you let him explain how he was feeling, you're just making hypotheses. You're projecting, or you're imagining what is it that is they're probably living through at the time. And you have no idea.
Oh, dude, the best ones ever really are the ones where, like, I always make fun of Lord. Because if people don't know, if you haven't noticed, Lord is like Dost or DDK. I actually like them, but I just also, because it's my style, it's British style of ribbing people, I just rib them a lot as well about the things I think are, like, risible about them, right? So Lord has famously, back in the day, made a video, right? I think it was for The Score or something, mate. He made a video, like an analysis video of Stewie2K doing a move on Cash, if people remember it, when he was on Cloud9, right? And it's exactly what you're talking about, which is Lord has just basically decided before he made the video, like, right, Stewie2K is a genius and everything he does is calculated. And so when he made this video, you can imagine it's almost like a parody, dude. Like, he really is just doing stuff like, pause, see what Stewie's thinking now is my enemy's positioned here, but if I do a 180, they can't know that I'd be there, and I flash, and by process of elimination, and it's like, and obviously the joke, the punchline here is, Manic, if we actually sat down with Stewie2K there, like, what were you thinking? He'd be like, I don't know, shit, dude, like, I'll just see if there's someone behind. You know, he wasn't, you know, like, we'd all love to believe he was thinking on that level, but he probably wasn't. Like, you know, it's like the example I said about shocks earlier. By the way, this is actually a nuanced point. In terms of what Shox's subconscious mind is doing, he is probably doing some genius calculation and, like, understanding of trajectories. But the point is, he wouldn't consciously tell me all that. Like, he really would just be like, oh, I am having a good game or whatever. Like, you know, I'm feeling it or some shit, wouldn't he?
Yeah, yeah. No. And it's a really, really important point, because it is true. When you're an expert at any task, is something that I studied as well in psychology, it's very hard to consciously explain what is it that your mind is going through as you're going through the game. That's the thing. The more you're an expert at something, the more intuitive it is, the harder it is to actually say, oh, this is what I'm doing now, and I am peeking to the left, and I'm doing this. So these intuitive geniuses, it's really hard to do. But the trick is, and I think this is somewhere where there's still a whole lot of a development avenue for Counter-Strike players, is that ideally, you would be able to do that with your own mind. And I think this is where the real champions of the sport out there have become experts at being conscious of their own thought process and their own mind and the movements of the minds that is happening throughout the game, right? Because I've played in very high pressure games. I've been in majors. I've been in multiple playoffs of majors. I've been in a semifinal 15-14. But at the time, I don't think I was aware of my own psychological movements. What is it that I was going through? Where was doubt creeping in? Why was doubt creeping in? What was I doing wrong? And I think this is somewhere where ideally, and it's a phrase that is very much disconnected from any kind of reality, but ideally, you want to be able to treat any round as completely isolated and an absolute unit in and of itself. Every round of Counter-Strike is a sort of a sandbox with a set conditions. You have set money, they have set money, and that's it. You can treat it as an absolute identified unit that you go into without thinking of anything else. But the truth is not that.
It's hard to do, not though, what's happening.
Exactly. And I always try to do that when I was playing, like trying to reset myself to the next round that's coming. But obviously, when I'm just in the comfort of my own home playing FaZe, it, whatever, streaming, it's easier to do as when you're in a stage and you've just allowed FaZe to come back to 12-12 while losing a clutch. How strong do you have to be mentally to accept and move on to the fact that you just lost a 3v1 against Rops when you were about to win the game? Like, it just imagine like the pain that it does to you. And this is where true champions, and I mentioned Djokovic because I do believe he's got a mental resilience that's out of this universe. The true champion will not let a bad move or a bad play hinder their chances of winning the next one. Yes. And once you get to that point, that's it. That's it. But it takes a tremendous amount of work to be able to get there and not be the victim of your own kind of psychological movements, as we most are in the daily life.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the Djokovic example is a great one because, yeah, if people don't know, he could get... I've seen him actually get completely wrecked in an early set and then he's still just like an impossible brick wall at the end of the game. Just like, it just feels like he can just cast it away. Like in English, we often say like water off a duck's back. Like that is probably the most OP skill you can have for sure. Because like, if people don't know, it's the opposite with even great players. Like there's even really good players who are still thinking about, ah, fuck, I started the game badly, or, oh, this guy's killed me in three bullshit ways already. Like if you notice, most of the advice that the people who are the sports psych people will give you is always like that. It's like essentially reset and remove all the like negative emotion and just look at the situation in front of you. Like if people don't know, I'll give you a very brief anecdote, which is, when Kobe Bryant, who was one of the best players at doing like the buzzer beater and the last second shot, when he was asked in interviews many times, like, how do you do it? They're all hoping, Maniac, that he's going to give you like a movie version of like, right, what I do is I think like, you know, like Batman, like I think of the time when I was a kid and everyone told me I couldn't do it. And I always believed I would be that player. And, you know, I'm there now and it's my chance to win and I'm going to take what's my... You want to believe all that because that's like the sports hype narrative. The way he said it's the opposite. He said, what you do is you think to yourself, I've practiced this shot thousands of times in an empty gym and I make it like at whatever percent, 46%. So all I'll do is just imagine I'm in the empty gym again and I'm just going to take the 4,001st shot. So it's the opposite. You actually remove, like you're saying, you remove everything except the actual action you're going to undertake. And essentially you just tell your mind, I'm now going to undertake this action with like focus and purpose without thinking about the outcome or what's happened. Because by the way, there's another detail. I've got the best references, by the way, right? Believe it or not, within the occult, there is a concept that the most pure action you can take is one where you don't have what's called lust of outcome. Like you don't think to yourself like, oh, then this happens, I'll be rich and I'll get the good. It's more like you just do the act and you try to make it just pure, because the notion is they think like psychically it's going to weigh you down somehow, or it's going to like pervert like the strength and the potency of what you're doing. So like, I would say there is some of that to what we're talking about here though. Like in this scenario, it might sound boring, but for real, if these guys do a good job, they really are just treating it like, I'm just playing a video game. I'm really good at it. I'm going to do this action. It will work in the game. And I'm not going to think about who the opponent is or what it means if I lose this round or what would they say about me. If you do all that stuff, you do get lost in your own mind to some degree, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. And then I think when a team has the tendency to fall into that mode, then it depends on, obviously, one, the amount of confidence that they have in general based on their season and based on where they are, but also the quality of the individuals. And this is where some players will probably be forever underrated, because we can never really be on that team speak, moment.
Yes.
But some players will have an ability to ground people in the moment and kind of snatch them away from all the hullabaloo that's happening outside, which is why, hey, the 4v2 that we've just played, if it was an empty server in an empty hall, we would have won this 99% of the time, because we know exactly how to win it. But because it's round 11 and because we're now in the Royal Arena and it's the semifinal, suddenly we misplay it. And I think it takes, like, winningest teams will have some of their players that are able to ground them in the now and remind them of what is important right now to happen, no matter what's happening outside. And not every team has that, of course. And it's one of the great underrated skills of competition, because we, as from an outside perspective, we don't really get to see. We don't really get to know who does that. But it is ever so important.
No, absolutely. In fact, I will say that's the area where I will always give, like, let's say, like a 10% uncertainty factor on any time I ever say this is a good roster move or a bad roster move. You always have to factor in what Maniac's saying here, which is that, for example, I might be right. Maybe the player that they're replacing isn't actually that good at things I'm objectively seeing, like how he plays his CT spot on Inferno. And the player I want them to recruit is a better player and maybe even would fit that role. But the part I can't know is maybe this guy, like you're saying, actually had some insane, like, either communication skill or, like you say, just his presence actually makes people not as worried, or they can trust him in some way. Like, that's where I will always say it's not as simple. Obviously, for comedic purposes. I want to pretend that the only reason Shock's played with Smiths is because they're mates and he's just like making the best cup of tea. But no, I'd imagine it's that this is a guy he has had so much experience with. He can trust him. He can know that when I tell you to do something, he knows what I mean. Like, these are all factors that if you're Shock's, I can see why they come at a premium to you. To me, they might not. But then again, the point there is that's why, like I say about the simple example, we can only really know in hindsight who was right and who was wrong on that one. If fucking Shocks had fucked around and won a major with Smiths, I'd have had to just take it on the chin, wouldn't I? Go, right, maybe there's something I'm not seeing that you are doing there. Because the reason I even give the Smiths example is people think I'm being mean when I bring up that story from years ago. You might even remember this, where Smiths used to say that you shouldn't flame him at that time when his stats were bad, because essentially he said he was like the best at like using flashbangs in the world or something. Now, I will say that seemed more like a meme at the time, because we hadn't gone to the Astralis era. People didn't know how powerful utility was. And I will say, when I actually did go back and look into it and talk to some of his teammates, he wasn't totally wrong. Like, apparently he did have some like specialist skill in that sense, and he would put time in, like that's what he was watching the demos for the counter flash or whatever, and figuring out. So there were things that he probably was adding. It's just obviously I thought that sounded like a meme at the time, because the joke there was like, obviously my joke was like, yeah, the thing is, Smiths, while you're flashing people, the other players just shoot him in the head with a gun, which is whatever. I'm just good at what I do, Maniac. What can I tell you? Like, it comes naturally. It's like breathing. I just talk shit, you know, like, so. We both had good points, is the point. We both had good points. Because, by the way, one thing I would bring this back to is, I actually do feel like something I wanted to get your take on is, right, I was just thinking about this the other day. It could obviously be a reach. Like, I'm not using a big sample size here, but I want to just give you these four players, right? On paper, all four of these players, if they're playing CS2, should be the best. So the four players go like this: Simple, Ziwu, Rops, and Monacy. All just fabulous talents, very good CSGO players. But if you notice, of those four, Simple doesn't even play CS2. Ziwu was a bit whatever at that first LAN, but then Rops and Monacy looked great at the first LAN, the Rops looked great at both, right? What I want to bring up as the point is this. When I think historically, Simple does have a very good work ethic, but in this case, he explicitly doesn't. He's even said he's not playing CS2, and he's even told other pros don't play CS2 for like 3 months because it might be shit. So we know he's not playing. Ziwu, famously, if people don't know, is actually considered one of those like geniuses that doesn't work that hard. It doesn't even have to scrim that much. He really does just turn up, you know, like DM for 5 minutes and go like, I am ready, and then just drop 30 or whatever. So the problem there is, just historically, I don't know if he has some crazy work ethic. Meanwhile, Rops and Monacy, pretty legendary for their work ethic. So I'm just going to put this out there. These two guys, and remember, people are even telling me the AWP doesn't work in the game. These two guys have just hit the ground running, and they're just the best in CS2. That has to be correlated with the fact that they also put insane hours in. Yes. And they have that mindset. If you notice, because the guys who find the bug, they have that mindset of like, I'm going to find something, I'm going to learn something new, I'm going to like level my game. Whereas those other two, by the way, I think the other two are more talented, Simple and Ziwu, but it's like, are you guys actually trying though? Because the Simple one, I just don't like that for the attitude. It's sort of like, don't play, guys. And then the Ziwu one's just like, look, mate, you had played a billion basic games before you ever became a pro. You've got to put in the same hours in this game. By the way, you could probably be the best, but you've got to put the hours in.
So I'll just start on the Ziwu angle quickly. I think he has a tendency to level and go towards his average, which is out of this world, after a little bit of time. I think he doesn't really do well with changes. If you trace back his ratings and you kind of correlate it with roster changes and moves that has happened, he kind of always has like a little bit of a downfall when something happens. And I just think that over time, because he's got such a rhythm where he plays his own game, he does his little face hit FPL, whatever he plays in there, I think over time he reaches again his usual level. And that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting him to have 2 or 3 months of sub-optimal in terms of performance. I mean, we're going to have to see in Copenhagen how he performs, but I do think he's going to need a little bit of time to adapt. If you remember, when Vitality went international, his first 2 months, I don't think he was in a conversation for best player in the world at all. I think he called back to that conversation after, let's say, Q2, like second quarter of the year or something like that. So usually he doesn't deal so well with changes, and I think he just has a very natural and sort of intuitive process to how he goes back to his level. And because he doesn't really overthink it, I think he just plays the game and that's going to be it. So yeah, on that note, I'm not really that worried. I would say if after 3 months he hasn't reached his level, then this is where you're going to start sitting sweat on my forehead as I'm on the desk and I'm going to have to try and use some copium on what's happening. But when it comes to Robs and Monacy, I think you're spot on the money. I think these are two players who had an extremely good mindset on how to deal with whatever situation was presented in front of them. And I think, obviously, we're getting philosophical. I kind of like when we do this kind of aparté, right? I kind of like it. But the matter of the fact is there's only so many things you can control in your life, right? And one thing you don't control is the quality of the game that's coming your way and the changes that's going to happen. There's not something you have control over. The only thing you control is the mindset you're going to have, the work ethic you're going to put in, the amount of hours you're going to research, and the mindset you're going to kind of program yourself to be in regards to that game. And I think these two nailed it, right? They just said, well, you know, the game is the game. Is it perfect? No, but that's what I'm being given, and I'm going to be the best at whatever it is that's happening right now. And you couple that, obviously, with their incredible talent and the time they're putting on the server, and then they hit the ground running. And good for them. I think this should be like that. I think it's very important that players who have that kind of mentality prove to everybody that they get a head start, because everyone has to realize you want to just whine around and cry around about the game that you're playing right now. There's going to be some other people who are going to be much more open to whatever is happening. They're going to put in the time and they're going to beat you. And they're going to beat you, and you deserve to be beaten by these players. So good for them. Good for Monacy. Good for Robs. Have yourself a little bit of a three. Because the way I see it is after 3 or 6 months, I think things were relatively stabilized. I think the gap is going to be breached a little bit. Some other people will probably catch up, and the meta would kind of fix itself and stabilize again. But just go ahead, just dominate a little bit. Dominate. You've earned it. And again, I think it's a really strong call to, the only thing you control is the amount of work you put in and the attitude you have towards the game. And these two seemingly have nailed it.
Yes. And also, I always can appreciate when the best players also do have like the best work ethic. It's why actually I think another player who doesn't always get his due is Device. Like, here's the thing. If you want to talk about like being a professional, he's the goat of that. I'll tell you that right now. If people don't know, it's not just that he watched those demos and heat maps like people heard. If people don't know, by the way, that's still rare to this day. Like, I mean, when I give this example of Zemu there's no way he's doing that. Like, he might get told some things by the coach or Zonic or Xtars or Apex might say, watch out for that. He's not, like, going and studying, like, when for real Device did study, like, Fallen demos or Simple or Kenny S or whatever. Like, I love it when players are not just really good, but it's, you can point for the younger people and go, look, you don't have to have his talent, mate. Look at how he approaches the game. Look at the way he holds his spots and how, like, disciplined he is, or how he has protocols he follows and how he covers a teammate. Yeah, it's the best shit ever, mate. Absolutely. By the way, one thing I thought we could talk about, because it's another one of those like messy scenarios, is this Astralis situation. Because obviously at this tournament, like I said, dude, Astralis looked great. Like, everything was looking awesome. Like, basically, not only were the good players, like BlameF and Device, basically do well all the time, but the Steer guy had like the tournament of his life thus far. Like, he actually was popping off. The problem is, though, we all know this isn't the real lineup, even though obviously it's going to play at Blast because of the way the roster lock worked. And now we're hearing this rumor, it just came out like the other day, that they are going to apparently finalize the deal and Yabby and Stown are going to come over to Astralis. So my question's going is, one, what for you, what is the point of the current Astralis? Like, how do you even frame them? Because to me, it's kind of like, I'll just say it straight up a minute. I don't really even think of them as like a team. I just watch BlameF and Device and go, I'm glad they're good. But like, when Yabby and Stown come, on paper, I think it's a messy roster, but there's some really good names there. There are going to be a lot of names in that lineup. So what do you think of current Astralis, and what do you envision for the next one? Like, are you excited about the prospect of the Yabby Stown Astralis?
I am. So the problem that I have is that I cannot dissociate the Counter-Strike, like the essential Counter-Strike, from all of the bullshit that's happening around it. I have a problem. I feel like it colors my opinion of it, right? I think on paper, when you bring Stabby, there we go. I did it. I said Stabby instead of Yabby and Stown. This is how much I'm programmed to it. This is the example right there. It's the proof is in the pudding. When you put Yabby and Stown with Device and Blame as a quad core, you'd be stupid not to be excited by it. Like, it's just the amount of like power that there is in these players in different roles as well. It's like, holy hell, this is almost like the fourth best quad you could have in Denmark. I cannot really imagine four other players together that would be stronger than that, right? So on paper, I am very excited by this roster. I really hope that they can just clean and cleanse their mind from all of the shit that's happening around there and just focus on the Counter-Strike. That's step one. Now, the current Astralis, from a social / psychological standpoint, is interesting, because I do not know how clearly defined and decided it already is who is going to take the door and who is going to leave the spot. Because you have three players, right? You have Borup, you have Buzz, and you have Stare. Two of these are arguably going to lose their spot. I don't know how decided this is. And I don't know if they know how decided this is. So you kind of find yourself in a super high pressure environment where uncertainty is all around. And this is basically the worst you can have as a professional, is not knowing what's going to be made of tomorrow. Are you going to lose your spot? What's the level of communication that's happening? Because Astralis famously doesn't really have a great communication between like the top level management and the players. Yes. Sometimes they just tell you like, I have no idea what the hell is going on. We don't know. I mean, famously they announced, I still think it was criminal to announce the signing of Steyr in Dallas while their player are doing great. And then you announce a signing as your players are moving into the playoff. I think it's criminal. So that's an example where there was definitely some missteps being taken in that kind of the top down communication. So I don't know how the players feel, but what I do know is that once again, all that Borup, Steyr, and Buss can do right now is improve their social credit in Counter-Strike and prove that they can, in fact, play the game at a higher level than what we've seen before. And whether fighting for their spot in Astralis or making them more attractive for other teams after that, I have no idea. I don't know from a role standpoint. It does feel like maybe Steyr's coming to life is a little bit too late because there are some role clashes with Yabby and with Blamef, and you would have to think he would have to be more defensive than he'd want to be, probably. But that's another issue.
Shall I tell you what my fear is, Maniac? If I had to guess between the three, like, look, obviously the Steyr one's the idea. He is like a newer player. They did just get in. They took a while. Maybe they want him for that reason. Let's be real. The Buzz guy is just the most obviously replaceable player because no one knows him. He's just a nobody. My fear is this, Maniac, is that it's that Borup will be the one they'll keep. And the reason I say that is this, is because if you think where they are in their career, I think Borup will just essentially say, I'll just play whatever role you want. Like, he'll just be the bait or the meat or whatever you want him to do. He'll probably just do that role. And they all know him. He's like, if people don't know, because he's been around the scene many years, he's a known quantity. Would probably add drama, I'd imagine, you know. I worry about that because I'd rather you gamble on like a Steyr or a Buzz or something, you know. I'd rather go with that angle. Yeah. If you could have these established players, you know.
I think Buzz has shown great improvement ever since he first put on the Astralis jersey, and the beginning was obviously very shaky.
Of course.
I do think he's been much better now, so he might have just bought enough confidence and trust from his teammates. And I also hope that Astralis do not take that boat that you're talking about, because yes, it does make everyone else comfortable when you have a player that's willing to sacrifice and just take all the shit positions and so everybody can shine. But there is a reality in which players like Yimpact, players like Robs, players like Majisk, they're showing you that strong anchors are in the conditions of a winning team. Like, you can't just have someone that's a free kill on a bombsite. That's just, it's impossible. So I would personally hope they keep either Buzz or Steyr. I do wonder if Steyr does not need a little bit too much freedom in order to thrive. And I don't think, the thing is, when you bring in Stone and Yabby with Blamef and Device, whoever is the number five spot is not going to get a whole lot of autonomy nor space. That's just a reality. You have some players that require priority. Obviously, Device as an opera has to have the all power of where he wants to go. Blamef famously is going to set him up for success, but he does deliver, so who am I to complain? That's great. And then even Stone, you have to cater to Stone's need. Like, you know what he can provide as a player. You can't just box him in a place. So basically, Yabby is going to have to be a team player. And the fifth, whoever this is going to have to be just plugging leaks here and there and play these kind of role positions. So I don't know who from Buzz and Steyr would do that best. I tend towards Buzz based on what we have seen. But I am really, really, really interested. And one of the most attractive, sort of like intellectually attractive topic of this whole conversation is, are these two sort of mentality of Counter-Strike be able to mesh? Because Heroic and Astralis do play diametrically different Counter-Strike. The Cadian school of thoughts and the Blamef school of thoughts as a leader, or the Device's time in Astralis, these are as opposed as you can possibly be. So these are very strong players that, if they can actually find a way to see eye to eye and do agree on how they play Counter-Strike, could be very, very powerful. And I just want to introduce like a topic that's something that I've been thinking about recently. Is, you know, we use the term chemistry a lot on the desk, and we talk about chemistry and like, oh, these players, they're meshing together. I've started to think about chemistry in a more of a divided way, which is you have person's chemistry and you have task chemistry, which is just how the team is actually functioning at the task that they're supposed to do.
Sure.
And whether or not they're going to have people chemistry, I don't know. I don't know if these players are going to mesh together. I don't know if you're going to form any kind of bonds or relationship, which obviously are important in the success of a team, and it's been proven many times in different sports. But I do think that there can be a task chemistry where all of them can look at each other and say, holy shit, like, we have the pieces. Like, let's make this work. Like, we can be winning right now. We can be beyond the whole, I want to be the superstar and I want you to flash for me. No, like, winning is what matters. Winning is what supersedes everything. And this quad that we're talking about is one that is interesting to see and intriguing to see. And I really hope that it works out just for Counter-Strike. Because I remain an eternal Device fanboy personally. I'll always be a fan of Device. I would love to see this core fight for playoffs and work out. I would really like that.
The funny thing is, when this move even was announced, obviously as part of that drama of like Cadian leaving and then they benched these players and people found out like, wait a minute, these two were going to go to Astralis, or they are going to, or it's supposed to happen, etc. Funny thing is, I think initially I wasn't that hyped actually for a few reasons. Like one, the problem obviously is it means I have to give up Heroic, and Heroic are already really good. It's like the magic box thing again from earlier. It's like, why would I hope I can get a team like Heroic? I had Heroic, like I don't need them. But so once I've got past that, then the other thing for me, I made this point on a past show, was just to me, it just shows how you don't let players pick the players, because it's like, pick the other two riflers. Like, if I'm Dermot and Device, like, it's actually Shush and fucking Tessus that would fit my team. Like, they walk, we have the roles sorted tomorrow if we do that lineup. Instead, like you say, what you've done is you've taken Blamef and Device. We're the two players who clearly get everything we want in Astralis currently. And then we've taken Yabby and Stown, who I'm going to speculate are probably the players who had the game set up for them in Heroic. And now we're trying to mash them in a team where, as you point out, they can't be four-star players. Like, it would be hilarious to imagine one support player can somehow like support four people at once. Like, I think we've gone too far when we're doing that. Yeah. So there is that angle. But my point is that, yeah, as you say, essentially someone's going to have to like humble their ego and probably take a lesser role or give up space and resources. And by the way, as a result, probably see their numbers tank. So at that point, you have to believe you're going to win. You have to believe it's going to be a great concept. So, but the thing I've realized is this, even though I think there is massive uncertainty, I actually am excited, because I've realised this is like the Danish version of what Cloud9 did, Maniac, where when they announced the Electronic Perfecto additions, it was the same thing. On paper, it was like, well, wait a minute, these are like four of the best players you can get. If somehow, the key word there is if, is doing all the heavy lifting. Mm. If this can work, you just imagine all four of those players playing great together. I think it's the same thing with this lineup. Like, when I look at the lineup, what scares me is I've never been a big Blamef IGL fan, and the fifth player, like we're saying, is totally uncertain and probably going to be a weak spot potentially anyway, unless it's one of the younger guys and they develop. So already, it's not like a sorted lineup. But essentially, as much as I don't know how they can do it and what it would even look like, I do think the prospect is exciting, though, because one thing I do think of is the biggest complaint I always did have about Heroic was sometimes I did think they had like a tiny little bit, not enough firepower, because a lot of they had like a very well-balanced team, but you can see the team did play off like great calls, teamwork, utility usage. Occasionally, you'd have a Stown carry performance or a big KD, but in general, you didn't expect that. In fact, that wasn't sort of one of the check marks on the win conditions. You didn't need that in that team. In this team, this could be a Danish team with serious firepower. Like, I'm just thinking of that prospect. Like, dude, it's been years since we've had a squad like that. Like, Denmark, obviously, yes, Traditionally, just known for the team play and the tactics. We could actually have a lineup here that just bangs out. Like, because again, like I say, I don't know what the if factor is, but if I'm going to have a team, bro, where for real, my third and fourth best players might be Stown and Yabby, you can see a world where that could be a really fucking exciting, dangerous team in CS.
I agree with you, and that's why I'm excited for it too. I also think you talk about the Blamef leadership abilities. I don't think he's proven quite yet that he's a trophy lifting IGL. And again, I'm harping on the term IGL here, because when it comes to individual output, he's one of the most fragging IGL we have.
He's mega, yeah.
That's just it. Like, he remains incredible individually, whether or not you want to tag him as beta or whatever this is. He is one of the strongest CT we ever have in a circuit. That's it. And he has a very strong ability to finish rounds. So that's it. But what I would like to see, if this or when and if this roster change happens, is that I do think a little bit of the craziness and the spice that Heroic had in their DNA would be needed in Astralis. Because Blamef, to me, seems more like a logical, methodological IGL where, hey, this is situation A. Situation A should call for reaction B. And reaction B should lead us to situation C. And this is how we're going to win. And it's all great on paper. And some of that is needed in Counter-Strike. You do need to have sort of patterns, and you need to try and optimize numbers and positions and all. That's great. That's part of the game. But if you want to win, you also need to be able to get dirty, like get down to it, take risks, have calls that maybe don't necessarily make sense at the time, but this is the moment where you need to hit you with the uppercut. Things that famously Snappy and Kerrigan have become immensely good at. Just hitting you with that strategy that maybe on paper isn't necessarily the most rationalized and optimized strategy, but it's just going to knock you out. If it works out, that's it. That's a knockout. The game is over. I haven't seen Blamef have that. I think Blamef calls a sound, stable, logical Counter-Strike, and it's only going to get you that far. You need that little bit of element of craziness. And Heroic, on the other side, they had too much of that. Heroic had way too much of the crazy, spicy, fireworky Counter-Strike, and they sometimes lacked a little bit of sort of discipline and logic in the choices that they were making. So if you can have the best of both worlds, where you can have Staun and Yabby kind of come in and say, hey, listen, these were some of the crazy things we were doing. Like, I really think it's important that we have that in our gameplay. And then if BlameF as an IGL and Astralis as a team is ready to welcome some of that, my fear is that they're going to say, hey, listen, guys, welcome to Astralis. Put the jersey on. You're now an Astralis player.
Yes.
This is how we do things. Great to have you here. I'm the leader. That's it. Of course, he has to remain in control. But I really hope that they would welcome these players and say, okay, guys, what was working in Heroic?
Yes.
What can you give us from your way of looking at the game? Because I personally, I have the logic and the probabilities and all that. I have it down to a T. I know how to do it. But tell me a little bit about the crazy stuff you were doing. And let's mesh something together. That's what I hope would happen for this lineup.
I've got an angle for you here, actually. So if people don't know, right now, as we speak, the League of Legends World Championship is going on. And in the League of Legends World Championship, Faker, who's probably the most famous player ever from League of Legends, obviously, like, he won the championship many times before, he's in the final again, right? And what happened this year was we had a very rare time where you get a chance to actually, like, as you say, A-B test, like, what is the impact of a player on his team? Because what happened was, in the summer, he had, like, a wrist injury and he had to leave his team for, like, a bunch of weeks. And at the time, you have to realize Faker himself isn't actually, like, essentially he was once like the symbol of League of Legends, but that was like 7 years ago now. What's amazing now is it's more like a Dupree thing. It's like, it's just longevity of still being able to compete, and it's like, just do something for the team, like help in some way. But what it turns out is, because as an actual raw mid laner and like best player in the server, he hasn't been that for years. Like, even in his team, he's not the person who's supposed to carry the game. Everyone understandably thought, right, well, maybe actually he should just be replaced, that maybe he's not that good. Well, what happened was, in these weeks where he was injured and he couldn't play and they had to put like a rookie in, essentially it wasn't just that the rookie played bad in mid lane, the whole team collapsed, dude. Like, it turned out he was maybe making like shot calls or things about how he positioned were making the other players comfortable enough that they were then doing their job and looking world class. And so literally almost the entire team piece by piece just sort of fell apart. Then he came back. This is why it's like a movie, like I said, it's almost like an actual scientific experiment. Then he came back and after a couple of games they got right back to a good level, they made a run to the finals, and now they're in the finals of Worlds itself, like months later. So you can see an example of how, like, what we're talking about here. Because to me, wait a second, where was I going with this whole point though?
We're talking about Astralis, Yabby and Staun, so I don't know if they're supposed to be that kind of piece in that puzzle.
Where was I going with this? Oh no, that was it. Yes, that was the point I was going to make. Yes, that was it. It was about Heroic. Because the I think actually the interesting thing about the experiment of Yabby and Staun completely leaving the org and now going, like you say, to a team where the interesting factor here is, I agree with you. In theory, the smartest convo you could have in Astralis now goes like this. They come in, Yabby and Staun, and BlameF and Device go, hey, like, I know, like, obviously, Device has won a lot of championships, but actually, you guys were the ones that were on top at the moment. Like, what are you doing that works in the game? What do we not see about the current meta, or how did he do against us in this? That would be a great angle. Obviously, the fear is that if you have people like Device, I mean, they're a mega veteran, they can just be like, well, I know how it's done. You're going to do it my way. I agree with that convo. But the other part to me is, I think we're going to get a chance to actually see how impactful was Cadian on those two Heroic players, because I've never seen those players be amazing outside of Cadian's teams. They were like, Staun was decent when he was on like teams like Frags and stuff, and then the Yabby guy, he was half as good on Copenhagen Flames. I thought he was okay, but he wasn't this good. Like, mate, the guy who joined this Heroic and was winning all those clutches, like, he looked way better. Like, that eye test wasn't there for me. So the problem I always actually did think they had in Heroic, it's one of the reasons why me and Maui are both on that train of, like, I think Cadian over-egged the pudding, and because I always thought he actually did. And by the way, my boy Carrigan's done this too. I think they did put too much of the weight on their shoulders specifically, because they understood, Maniac, that, like, yeah, I'm going to get blamed, but also if I make the call that wins, I get the credit though. Like, people are going to know I did it. That was my call. And I did. I know what you mean about the Heroic angle. The one flaw I always thought they had, this is why I say I critique the firepower a bit. They weren't doing anything wrong with how they played, but it did sometimes feel like, for the number one team, they did seem to like try to gimmick people a lot in the rounds, if you know. Like so much of their T side was like tricking you, or like CT was like a super fast rotation, like just gamble on it or whatever. Like, actually, you're right. Like, the best teams ever, they're more like bread and butter CS. It's more like, right, we'll just play the basics and then maybe we throw a bit of that in, because that's what I'm going to wait and see now. Like, I think if Staun or Yabby don't end up looking good in this team, it actually probably increases KD in stock, like I say about the Definitely. Faker example. Like, I think it'll actually make people think, well, actually, it's probably the fear if you're those players, which is, did KD make them to some degree? Mm-hmm. Obviously, he didn't control their mouse, but so much of that team, it's not as simple as when people go, you were the heart of the team. They usually mean spiritually or emotionally, and that's I think it seems like in every sense this guy was the heart of the team. Like, everything that happened from minute one to the end in the Rook was somehow involving KD. And so I also want to see, how do these guys sort of do outside of the nest, Maniac? Like, they have to fly solo to some degree now. In fact, as you even said there, the other concern I have is, this reminds me of when in football, really good players from a domestic scene choose to go abroad. Like, an English player might go to La Liga or Serie A. Sometimes the reason it doesn't work is exactly like what we're talking about. It's like you're walking to a different world. Like, if you go into an AC Milan dressing room, they aren't doing that convo we just talked about. So how were things working when you were in the Premier League? They're going to be like, hey, like, put your jersey on. You play for AC Milan now. This is what we do. Go out there and win. And if you can't do it, by the way, we'll get someone else in. We're not going to, you know, torture ourselves. What's going on with you? We'll just replace you. We'll get the guy in who can do that job. So if your people are, there's the other angle I'm just going to throw in at the end for Staun and Yabby. In the Heroic, considering they were an org with amazing results, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of pressure on you. Dude, there's pressure in Astralis. Like, let's call up fucking the speed dial for Farley and fucking Bobski and those guys. Ask them what it's like to play. Lockie. No one even remembers these guys, some of them. Like, there's a lot of pressure when you're in Astralis. And also, quite frankly, I don't think people like Device. This is an angle that people maybe don't know about the old Astralis. They're not all just like the loveliest people ever. Like, they're also like, they can be harsh in their own way. They're ruthless. They want to win. Like, if someone like, if you play with Device and you shit for 6 months, he's not going to just keep patting you on the shoulder and go get him next time. Eventually, he's going to go get this guy out of here and get someone in here who can win. Like, I think the AC Milan example I give. So I just have a few concerns in that sense. Like, I think what people are doing, like I pointed out previously, is they're just looking at like the numbers of what you could do if you were Staun, and they're thinking it plugs into Astralis. Whereas I don't know, maybe it does. If it does, awesome. But if it doesn't, I could see it going the other way really hard too, mate.
No, I agree with you. I think these are very warranted worries about this roster. And it's also, another final angle to this is also Heroic. If I always, when I look at a team, I have this continuum in my head versus it's team on one hand and it's individual on the other, right? And I think Heroic, out of all of the teams that we had at the very top game, were one of the most grouped, sort of cannibalized team, right? Your identity as a player sort of kind of erodes, and you are a Heroic player. That's who you are. It's Kaden out there as a captain, and then it's his squad. You are Heroic, and we are playing the Heroic Counter-Strike. And then when Kaden was talking about it on an interview, he said, that's the brief that we give to all the new players. We say, hey guys, you've come to Heroic now. We do the things Heroic way. This has obvious benefits and positive. The relationship between the players is much tighter. People are looking at a common goal, and they have common ways to do things, and they see eye to eye. That's great. These are the positives. The negatives are, when you need these individuals to step up and defy sort of the odds of the round, it becomes a little bit harder because some of that responsibility is kind of diluted into the whole, well, it's Heroic, you know, we're Heroic. We lose some, we win some, we do everything as a team. There is a healthy dose of ownership as an individual that you need to have in your losses and in your wins. It cannot just always be the system. It cannot always say we won as a team, we lose as a team. There's a healthy amount of, hey, I messed up.
Yes.
I should have done better, and I will do better next. And this is where we're gonna figure out how much of that individual ownership Yabby and Staun can claim. Like, can you be more than just a piece in that Heroic machine that Kaden put together? Can you actually have that amount of individuality in order to shine in a new system? Because honestly, I feel like FaZe is probably one of the few teams that has managed to have the best of both worlds, which is they do have an identity. They are FaZe. There's no doubt. If you and I, we need to describe the FaZe playstyle, we can. They have an identity that we can sort of define. But at the same time, their individuals have remained sort of untethered from the whole FaZe gestalt, and they can still be individuals. And Robs will always be Robs, and Brokey has his own Brokey way of playing, and Rain is super aggressive. They've maintained that, and it's really hard to find. I think in Heroic, the individuals kind of were meshed into sort of a smoothie of players, and that smoothie was not that bad. I mean, they did have great results,
yeah,
but we needed individuals to kind of punch through these lines. It wasn't happening. So that's, if I'm Yabby, if I'm Staun, these are some of the lessons that you have to draw from that Heroic adventure, because not everything was negative. Hell no. Heroic was a great team, one of the greatest team that we had in CSGO for a long time. They were contenders for titles, they went to grand finals. they were doing a lot right. It's not about just pissing on their legacy, absolutely not. But you have to learn from whatever it was that didn't go your way, and now you're being gifted possibly a very interesting new chapter with one of the most, if not the most tenured and successful player in the history of Denmark, and the individually strongest IGL we have in the circuit. That's just a great opportunity you've been given. So learn from whatever did not work in Heroic, because on paper, I think the pieces are here for some sort of success.
And by the way, the other thing as well that does lurk behind this is, it's such a bummer that there's not even any rumors that anyone joins fucking Heroic, dude. Like, where are all those leaks? Like, surely they're going to have some players and have a fucking professional team. Like, it's wild. Like, that's the one part of the equation that no one else seems to be focused on. Like, where are all the moves there? Like, why am I not hearing for real rumors like Hooksy joins, or if FaZe breaks up, Carrigan joins? Like, I need to hear something soon, Heroic. Like, the joke is, if you're Heroic, you should bloody leak something. Like, we need some reason to believe this is going to be a real team, not just like Dupree getting 3 months of salary or some shit like that. By the way, I did have one last topic I thought we could do, which is, being as obviously Blast is coming up, well, one thing that is quite a cool angle that, in light of that topic earlier about Simple, is since Na'Vi has signed Wonderful, dude, I can finally breathe again and actually watch Na'Vi play now. Like, this was whack, this whole thing of like, let's wait. Because technically we're still waiting. Like, maybe Simple does come back in 3 months. But the point is, to me, at least now I can watch the game. Like, this is a player who should be able to walk at the door, pick up the orb, do something, frag out, and then at least actually, like, the rest of the team's in the game again. Like, we'll see if they're any good. What are your thoughts on this Wonderful to Na'Vi move on any angle?
If you just consider Wonderful, I'm very happy for him. Because I think what he did in Spirit, which was step up for Dexter at the time, yes, which for all of the issues that he had on an individual level, and it's been talked through in many different places and many different times, for all of the issues he had, his input as a player was massive. Like, his numbers were massive. Sure. So when Wonderful comes in and steps in for Dexter, that's not an easy role to fill. It's big, big shoes to fill. Honestly, it made me forget about Dexter in about 2 weeks. So individually, I think he'd done enough to have my attention, 100%. He's a young player, definitely the future. The CIS scene and the amount of players that come out of the scene is just completely, it's stupid. Like, it's ridiculous the amount of players they have. So I'm very happy for Wonderful to be able to step. I think we also have to imagine what it is for a CIS player to put on the Na'Vi jersey. Like, there is a special kind of pride in joining what is one of the most decorated powerhouse possibly. And as a name, I still remember the day I saw my Titan jersey and I was like, holy hell,
okay,
you know, this is Na'Vi, right? So for Wonderful, he's got a beautiful opportunity in there. Now, I'm not going to stand here and pretend like losing Simple is a win-win. Like, holy shit. Of course not. Of course not. You wouldn't want to lose Simple in any point. But the truth of the matter is, if the attitude that he displayed on the outside was also reflected on the inside within the team as they were playing, no matter how good you are going to be detrimental to a group of players. If you hate the game, if you do not want to play the game, if you think the game has to change, if you think it's a waste of time, and unfortunately for him, you are the greatest player of all time, which means people are going to look up to you for motivation, for drive, for performance. You are letting everybody down. So good for Simple to just say, you know what, screw this, I'm out. I don't want to do this right now. I have more respect for him doing that than just cashing the paycheck and half playing, half-assing the whole shit, and then just basically making some money while he waits in the shadow. I have more respect for him saying, I'm out of this. I don't think this is working for me. I hate all of it. I'm out. More respect. All the power to you. But if I am Alexi B right now, I'm probably happier. I'm probably happier because I'm going to have a player coming in who's actually hungry, who wants to play the game, who's going to value the opportunity that he's got. And who knows, maybe it's going to change the whole dynamic of the team. It's happened in sports, in many different sports over the last decades, that a very strong player leaves a team, but then suddenly the dynamic is different and then some other players pick up the slack and become much better. Who's to say it's not going to happen for Na'Vi? So I am very curious about this Na'Vi team. And I'm very curious about the body language they're going to display and how they're going to behave as a team now with Wonderful instead of Simple. And I do wonder how Alexi B is going to fare now that, yes, he does lose one of the most valuable player you could definitely have next to you, but it kind of puts him on the spotlight where now he has to make the call. Like, you don't have your get out of jail free card Simple either, yes, coming in with calls or with clutches. You are the IGL. You need to have a vision. This was one of the critics that people flow his way in G2, is that you cannot just be the facilitator of Nico, just as you cannot just be the facilitator of Simple. What is the Counter-Strike you want to play as an IGL? Go, show me. You have a team now of players who are willing to listen to you and follow you into whatever Counter-Strike you want to play. Now is the time. There's absolutely no excuse not to play the Counter-Strike that you want to play. And so I'll sit and wait and see what is it he want to show us.
Oh, I'm actually with you on that last point, by the way. You can even argue in the short term, this is better for Alexi B, because think about it, right? If he loses with Simple, every hit is just going to go, you had the goat and you lost, like they did when he was doing Acor. And then if he wins, they'll just go, you had Simple, how hard could it be? Like, you can't really win on those ones. Like, there's a reason why those players even do sort of steal the credit of their coaches, their teammates. That's just the way the fans are. Whereas, like, the joke is, wonderful, look, if you can't have Simple, he basically is like diet Simple, isn't he? Like, he's really good, but he's just not quite on that level yet. So he can not only replace Simple, but he even could potentially actually carry the role. Like, it's not like he's coming in like Aussie and Liquid. Like, he also, in theory, if things work, is going to be the MVP if you win an event, if you're Na'Vi, and he's going to have, like, you know, 0.8 kills per round and 1.2 rating and win the MVP. Like, it actually, in some senses, like, you haven't lost as much as it seems like, even though, obviously, if you think of, like, the dream of Simple, of the top, top end, and if he ever's motivated and feels the game, obviously, like, you would take that in a heartbeat. Just the point is, right now, that isn't what you're trading. Like, you were trading a guy who was disinterested, who even openly said, and quite frankly, at the end of CSGO, even looked a bit burned out, and maybe he didn't know if he wanted to grind, etc. Like I said earlier about the point with him and Monacy, him and Zewu versus Monacy and Rops, in, you know, just difference in attitude, because obviously I did that purposely, because we would think the former are more skilled than the latter, wouldn't we? So what I will say is this, though, is I've got a couple of points, because I've done like the general What If Wonderful Joins on some of my other shows. I did have a couple of smaller points I wanted to make, though. So one is this. Another thing I actually think specifically for this version of Na'Vi is a massive positive that Wonderful brings over Simple is, dude, it was already bad enough in some of the lineups, if you remember, when Na'Vi wouldn't win, like the one with Zeus in 2018, where him and Zeus and Edward often cost him the game. Or you think of even, by the way, even before they got going in the online era, remember when they used to lose to Gambit every time? And again, like, Bit was looking a bit shaky, Flamey was in and out of the lineup. Like, people used to even look back then, Simple used to give the daggers to people. At least in those lineups, though, dude, everyone's from the CIS region. Like, most people are from Ukraine or from Russia, and they understand culturally that, like, people are just pretty harsh. Like, if you don't know, by the way, you know this, but if you're a fan, if you've never been to those countries, it's not like America. If you walk down the street, you'd think like everyone hates you, because they just don't smile automatically at people. Like, you know, people are just like quite harsh. They sort of walk and, you know, but they don't actually have any thoughts about it. That's just how they actually are normally. So you would think, oh, everyone's like, it's in a bad mood or something. Have I done something wrong? No, like, they just don't automatically like go out of their way to be like, oh, like an American would, like, put on a fake smile and be, hey, how you doing today? Like, they don't do that. So my point here is, I think to some degree, the CIS players like get that Simple can sort of rage a bit like that. Like, they understand that culturally. Dude, I don't know if people from like Romania or Finland, I don't know if they get that. I think that's a very different vibe. And quite frankly, from all the things I've heard about Wonderful, I haven't heard that he has any of these problems that Simple and Dexter and some of these guys that had the mega skills but were a bit toxic had. Like, by the sounds, it sounds like a great teammate. Sounds like a very, like, sounds the sort of humble attitude you want an up-and-coming player to have. So one, he can replace Simple, but then he also actually can potentially alleviate that atmosphere. Because I agree, by the way, it's one of the only knocks I have on Nico in his whole career. It's not actually anything about you failed a bit. No, no, my biggest knock on Nico is this. It's like, bro, when you're playing with like a 17-year-old, which he used to be, obviously Monacy was very young when he joined the team, he can't be like watching you lose a round and then see that you're like, whatever, like that's what he should be doing as a 17-year-old. Like, dude, you're the mega veteran. You're the one who's supposed to like show him sort of like the stoic approach, like how to say it, take it on the chin, how to not get too bothered by it, how to not like, because I always said the problem Nico had is this. I don't actually believe, by the way, that Nico ever did actually say toxic things. I don't think he ever did like Simple turn to someone and sort of say like, what the fuck are you doing? You just lost all round. But the problem is, it's like, bro, your whole atmosphere says that though, bro. Like, when you have that look on your face when I lose the 2v2 with you, like, fucking hell, like you don't need to say at that point, like in that scenario, it's like I can even see out my peripheral, like, oh fuck, he's pissed off by that. I think Simple had an even worse version of that. I mean, people will know specifically the NPL example or SDY. Like, those guys looked like they were on death row when they were playing in this teammate. Like, they would be playing, and the second they made a mistake, you could tell they were like, oh fuck. Because now, you know, not only have you made a mistake and you're losing in Na'Vi, but now you've pissed Simple off. And mate, he might even say something about you in the fucking interview after the game. Like, I thought that was actually a nightmare, that whole scenario. Look, we all tried our best generally to turn a blind eye, because we know about the whole situation in real life that they're all under and there's different stresses, but that did suck. Like, if you have a player, like think about what you were saying earlier about Device. Device is a model professional. Like I said, he might actually like tell the org to kick you out if you're not good, but he's not going to be like hard flaming you to your face. Like, I do think that's an area where if Simple isn't going to be engaged, like, he obviously doesn't like CS2 right now. He isn't actually essentially wanting to wake up and do his job and winning the game right now. In fact, that's why he's even said he's going to take time off. I agree. That should be what you should do. If you don't feel the give, you don't like it, you're only going to be at your worst. You're going to be at your grumpiest. But I think in that sense, like, that can potentially lift some of that. Because to me, I've always said this lineup of Na'Vi is such an ambitious project. I think the pressure on everyone is insane. Every single player in the team. I mean, you can even argue, by the way, even Bitt was under pressure. Because if it hadn't have gone well, they're international. They don't have to keep him because he's Ukrainian. He could have got fired. Even he's actually played pretty well. So to me, that angle's a good one. It means you don't have the negative influence Simple can have. And then the last thing I'll throw in there is, if we're going to bring in a player and try and fix this Na'Vi squad, a guy who is Ukrainian and seems to have a very sort of like amiable attitude, sounds like a great person for Blades to fucking work with. Remember, this is his star player. Like, I already know, like, you're talking about from when he was in teams like Team Spirit and Sprout. I know that, like, Wonderful could play the game, but I also now actually, I'm fairly confident, like, he can sync up with Blade and forget what he has to do in this team. So the cool thing is, I actually do think, like, to bring it all the way back, I feel like I never, because I only got to see Pro League at the end of CSGO with, like, this real Na'Vi, like, where they had some potential. It feels like in CS2, they've just been paused the whole time. Like, I couldn't give a fuck when Blade's replacing Simple and literally AWPing. Now they're not even at the tournaments. Like, at least now, like I say, I can sort of, look, I have to tell myself Simple's not on the team and forget that. But once I forget that, it's suddenly an interesting lineup again, bro. Like, this lineup can mix it up. This could be in, why couldn't this team be in a semi-final, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think at least we can be hopeful and we can be curious about it. One player that I really will keep my eye on to see if there is going to be some sort of reaction is Ime. Because I think
A lot of people think he's on the chopping block, right?
Yeah, and I think when you look at how Na'Vi has fared with this lineup with Simple in it, I think it's a very acceptable claim to make that maybe he should be cut, right? Because he was brought in under the premise that, hey, he's going to be a superstar delivering superstar Counter-Strike. Very quickly, we realized that's not really what's happening quite yet. But from the conversations we had with him, either at desks or on the EPL sofas or whatever, he definitely seemed to be a guy who would be impacted by whatever is going on in the team and what is the climate of the team. Exactly what you were talking about. And I'm not making excuses. I think part of being a professional is also being able to sustain a certain level of negativity, a certain level of frustration,
for sure, yes,
without letting that destroy your own game. Like, there is something to be said about a professional needs to be able to do that. But I do curiously and genuinely wonder whether this different atmosphere with Wonderful in isn't going to alleviate some sort of pressure that Ime either had put on himself or put on himself because he was playing in a Na'Vi jersey next to Simple and because he wanted to deliver in whatever that's behind it. I do wonder. Genuinely, are we going to see a different face from him? Are we going to see a better performance? Because in the Gamer Legion jersey, he was much better. He was a much better player than he had been in Na'Vi. So we'll see. I'm genuinely interested.